Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining Anablock Podcast. Our guest today is Bryce Jacobs. Bryce is an AI consultant based here in California. Bryce, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. So we have a lot to chat about, a lot of interesting things happening in AI. But first of all, how did you get started with AI and software in general?
Yeah, so I studied computer science in undergrad, but I thought for a long time that AI was just a field for people with master's or PhDs in computer science. I was always interested. To be honest, ever since high school, I thought, wow, AI is really cool. And this was before ChatGPT. Siri was probably the first time that I saw something and thought AI is just amazing. But I didn't know how to really get started, how to get into it. So I read some like scientific papers on it. I watched YouTube videos related to machine learning. And it was more of a vague hobby that I had until after I graduated, after I got a job unrelated to AI. I eventually realized that there are ways to get involved to actually work with AI that don't involve having a PhD and building neural networks from scratch and training them from scratch. And this was, let's see, this was about in, I want to say late, or sorry, yeah, late 2022. I realized that I could just get started with AI because there's so many tools online. At the time, I started playing with Hugging Face's libraries. I just started getting my hands dirty, building things myself. I started playing with Fast AI. And just by getting started with it, just by playing with it and trying it out, I actually started to get some experience. And I thought, this is so much more doable than I'd thought before. I didn't need to build a neural network from scratch each time. There were pre-trained models that I could use. And as I was getting more and more into this, and I thought, oh, this is really interesting, I started to think, okay, I want to do this as an actual job. I want to make this my career. And I started focusing on natural language processing specifically, because I've always had an interest in linguistics as well. And I thought, this is an excellent merger of AI and linguistics. And so I set out to build a relatively simple application. I think it was text simplification, basically something that you get some sort of technical document or something in legalese, or even something that's just relatively hard for the average person to read, and makes it more simple while retaining all of the details. And I thought, this is really cool. It's a fun project, and maybe I can use this to, you know, put it on my resume, apply to jobs. Maybe I could sell this. And then in late 2022, I'm trying to remember whether it was November or December, GPT 3.5 came out. ChatGPT hit the market and took the world by storm. And I tried it out, and sure enough, it could do everything I hoped to do and more and better, and it was all ready to go. And my first thought was, oh, well, I guess I can't, you know, I should just give up on this. You know, AI has been solved. And then I stopped for a second. I'm like, wait, what am I saying? This, it's not that AI has been solved. AI has been unlocked. And that was the turning point for me, where I went from the more classical machine learning way of thinking of, okay, I'll find a specific neural network, either, you know, some pre-trained, some, you know, I'll get BART or one of the, you know, popular neural networks off of Hugging Face. I'll train it on my data. I'll build it into an application. I went from that way of thinking to the more modern way, which is, okay, here's a pre-trained large language model. Let me go use it to solve some specific problem. Let me build that into an application. Let me build an application around that. Use that as the brain. And ever since then, for the last basically year, I've been finding ways to apply this, finding interesting ways that these large language models, namely the GPTs, can be used to solve real world problems. And I can get it more into that, but I'd love to hear if you have any thoughts or reflections or questions on that.
No, that's very actually interesting. That's very interesting path to where we are today. And so what are you, if you can tell our listeners, what are you doing today? Where are you, I guess, where are you working, and specifically what type of work do you do?
Yeah, so there are two main things I'm doing right now. One is integrating the GPTs, well, through the API that OpenAI provides, into an application for a company. Essentially, the tool that I'm building is an automated tutor. So right now, my client has a company that provides education technology, and they have a visual programming language, which means students who haven't programmed before, who aren't familiar with writing code, and who aren't quite familiar with the paradigm, the mindset, the way of thinking involved in programming, they can actually use my client's tool to get started for the first time, to get the ideas, get the basics learned, so that when they move on to actually writing code, typing out the letters, they have the way of thinking mastered. So they can write more efficient code, they can pick up new languages more easily, and make a better transition. But one thing my clients found is that a lot of students who use the tool and teachers who will have the tool in their classes, they need extra help. They need tutors. They need help with going from having never programmed before to writing their first program, just that 0 to 1 transition. That's the hard part. So what I'm doing for my client is building an AI that tutors students and starting from their ideas, breaking them down into actionable components, and then coding that themselves with the visual programming tool. So that's one thing I'm working on right now. The other thing is really just exploring how to apply LLMs in large language models in different ways. You know, I mentioned that this is something that I've been doing for the past year. This is something I'm continuing to do. And I think it's something that, as a whole, the world will be doing for the next few years, is figuring out what are all of the ways that these tools can be applied. I've heard plenty of analogies made to electricity. When electricity first became, you know, when we discovered electricity, you know, the first thing you can think of is, oh, let's make a light bulb. Light bulbs would be great. And we can brighten up the world. And for people living in a world without light bulbs, with using just candlelight, yeah, using electricity to make light seems like a very good next step. And it is, it's a very obvious next step. But the thing is, we use electricity for so much more than lights right now. We use it to power computers. We use it to power all these new digital technologies. And we use it to power machines that we didn't have before. So LLMs are, in a way, like electricity. They're a new tool, that new power that exists, and we're working on figuring out how to apply that. And to give some more specifics on this, I'm looking at how AI agents can be applied. And the really interesting part about, or the differentiator between an agent and other types of AIs, is that the goal of an agent is to have something that is independent or can run on its own with minimal oversight and supervision. And it can accomplish tasks in an intelligent way. It can interact with the world through tools, through interfaces, and it can get a job done, like, in a way like a human would, but with more efficiency, with more speed, less, you know, human creativity, of course, but also much cheaper and faster. So your listeners might have heard of GPTs, the new release from OpenAI. These are an example. They're one example of agents. It's kind of an agent builder that OpenAI has provided. It gives you a nice interface into actually customizing the prompt and the way that GPT-4 will interact with you. in a way that structures how GPT-4 will think, what tools it can use, what knowledge base it can pull from. And these are all the components of what it's like to build an agent. The one thing GPTs are missing right now is a nice way to interact with each other in an autonomous fashion, because the real power of agents comes from when you have many of them working autonomously, much like having humans working autonomously in companies together. Now, I know that was a lot.
No, that's very interesting. Yeah. Actually, it's a very interesting analogy about electricity. I frankly have not thought about it, but it makes a lot of sense. So out of curiosity, like the current project that you're working on, is that something that's currently live or is still in sort of development stage?
The Tutor AI?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's in development. It should be released around Christmas time. So that would be
very cool
to show off.
I'm definitely looking forward to checking it out when it's ready. Since we're kind of, obviously the AI is a huge topic around the world, especially here in Silicon Valley. What are some of the emerging trends or technologies related to AI that you're seeing? Obviously things are changing every week pretty much these days, but where do you see us going in the next, I guess, 6 to 12 months?
Yeah, great question. And of course, I'll preface this by saying this is not any sort of financial or trading advice or anything. I can't predict the future perfectly. These are just my thoughts. I'd say the agents that I talked about, the model of, or the framework of having an LLM as a kind of brain of this autonomous agent, this thing that can execute tasks, follow instructions, do work on its own. That is absolutely, it's an extremely powerful tool that we're going to see a lot more of. Like, I expect we're going to see a lot more of. I mean, it's something I'm working on right now, working on actually building these agents and applying them, putting them out into the world. So, and you know, one example of an agent that we're all familiar with is a chatbot. You know, that's the most popular application of an agent, perhaps, but also not, arguably not the most useful. So a couple things. We're definitely going to see a lot of chatbots, or I expect we're going to see a lot of chatbots. Every company who has a website with a bunch of information about what product, what services they offer, and information about the company would likely benefit from having a chatbot that sits on their homepage that anyone who comes across their website could use to get questions answered in seconds, rather than spending minutes digging through the website to find answers. And you know, I just said that chatbots are not necessarily the most useful application of agents, but since it is likely to be the most popular, or at least well-known, I'll just take a minute to go into them. So imagine you've got a, let's pick real estate. You've got a real estate company, and to be fair, I'm not the biggest expert in this, but if you have properties, or actually let's say property management, let's say you have a company and you manage rental properties, something you'd rent out on Airbnb. You have a lot of different properties that you need to manage. You have hopefully people coming to your website looking for why they should pick you, have your help with managing their own property. If you have testimonials, if you have information of successes you've had in the past, if you have information on how your company functions, have gone in the past, that's great for someone to read through. But the thing is, it would take them at least minutes to read through testimonials, to read pages of text. And most likely, they're not going to want to sit there and read all this. They want to have a quick decision on why they should use your service over someone else's. So you have a chatbot there, let's say, on your homepage. Someone comes along on the internet and they want their question answered of why should I use this specific service? Now, hopefully you have your hook right there on your homepage of why they should use your service, but let's say they want a little more detail. Well, they can ask the chatbot why, you know, they could start by saying, why should I use this service? Why should I use this company? And the chatbot should list something like a summary of your successes. You've accomplished these specific milestones with this number of clients in the past. You've achieved in total this much, you know, insert the indicator, the milestones that you've worked towards here. This is a bit vague and it's a bit abstract, but the point is, when you have a chatbot on your website that anyone can ask questions to, it's in a way like having an assistant who can answer customer questions, but the assistant is there, ready to go 24/7, never needs to take a break, can answer questions right away. And if the assistant, the chatbot, gets stuck, they can refer the potential customer back to you. So not only is this answering the user questions, but it's providing a sort of storefront. It's like a website. It's the equivalent of having a greeter outside of a store, but on a website. And they can refer the potential customer back to you, bringing in more leads. But specifically, these are chatbots. These are something that we're seeing already, not exactly becoming ubiquitous, but becoming more popular. Other applications of agents, I think, will be more beneficial, more useful. So let's stick with the analogy or the example of the rental property management company. They've got lots of tasks to take care of. They've got bookkeeping. They've got to reconcile transactions. They've got to reconcile invoices. They have customer service they need to manage. They need to answer their customers' questions. They need to stay on top of messages that are coming in from the people paying the money. They've got to handle acquiring more leads. They've got to have a team of people who understand what's going on in their company. So let's look at something like reconciling invoices and transactions. So right now, let's say you have a bunch of receipts for expenses and you want to put those into a spreadsheet, let's say reconcile it with an invoice, make sure that everything lines up so you can bill the right people the right amount of money. Right now, you'd definitely need to hire someone, pay someone money to sit down, read pieces of paper, type numbers into spreadsheets. And, you know, humans make mistakes. We're only human. Not to say that AIs don't make mistakes, but just to say that mistakes can still happen. The thing is, the problem or the inefficiency with having a human reconcile these things is it takes time. We need to read and type at the speed of a human, whereas an agent with vision, with being able to actually look at a picture, do OCR, optical character recognition, extract the information off of receipts right away and put those into a spreadsheet on its own, can do things orders of magnitude faster than humans. Then you feed it the invoice. It either does OCR to scrape the information off, or you give it ahead of time the format of the document, tell it what to expect in terms of where to find what piece of information. It scrapes all that information off. It can do reconciliation. It can point out, hey, here's where we have discrepancies. Here's the amount of money that's gone missing in one way or another. And here's which transaction had that issue. For example, maybe it's buying supplies. And they say, okay, from buying these supplies from the store, we had this discrepancy. Here was the person too who submitted this receipt. Here's their contact info, go talk to them. And this is something that an agent can take care of. It can manage or it can execute these tasks as if it were a very narrowly focused human. And then, of course, at the very end of my example there, I mentioned it can report back to the actual human. I think that at least for the relatively near future, we're not going to see AIs doing everything on their own. There's always going to be a need for human oversight. But the thing is that rather than having a human doing the manual reading and translating or moving of information, you leave that to the AI and you just have the AI report back to you when it gets truly stuck on something that it needs a human for, or when the task is done.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So I'm wondering, you know, like the chatbots as part of the, at least the enterprise software space, have been around for a while, and companies for probably last, I would say, 6-7 years have been trying them out. But then as you mentioned, like probably November, December of last year, suddenly they're actually effective, because the issue before was, you know, I work with like Dialogflow flow APIs, for example, or even like some of the messenger bots on Facebook. But the issue before is like they were not very reliable. So they were introduced as a tool to help users, as you said, kind of dissect or parse information quickly on websites, or answer some like of the kind of customer support, maybe inquiries, but they were quickly removed because they were just proven to be ineffective. What do you think has changed now with essentially, I would say most of the world is using now OpenAI APIs versus like maybe Anthropic or some of the other ones? I guess what has changed over the last 12 months now that we can actually really use them and for them to actually be effective, not make mistakes?
Yeah, no, this is an excellent question. The massive change, as far as I can see, is the shift to using large language models as the brain. So like you mentioned, if you have a workflow, if you have, let's say you have a flowchart essentially governing a chatbot's interactions, you're going to get a very rigid conversation. If you talked with a person and the person had a flowchart in their head of how the things they can talk about, you're going to get a very stiff and not human feeling conversation. You know, anyone who's talked with a person who always says things like, I don't know, all of the time when you try to ask important questions, knows it gets really annoying really fast, and chatbots are no exception to this. So having a chatbot that can, you know, rather than just follow a flowchart, having a chatbot that can dynamically in the moment process the request, process the information that the user is asking for, process an actual conversation more like how a human would, it just improves the quality of the conversation in a way that is just unparalleled. We just haven't seen this before, as far as I can tell. The other, and to drill specifically into that, there's something called RAG, Retrieval Augmented Generation, which means when you provide a large language model with documents, specific pieces of information, knowledge that it should know, it can pull from that knowledge and answer questions based off of it. And that is the big, it is, I would say, the factor that's changing chatbots and chat interactions right now. Because, you know, like the sort of customer service storefront chatbot I was talking about, it can answer the user's questions dynamically from the company's documents information. And, you know, to drill more into this example, or to get more into this concept, I want to give an example rather than of a storefront chatbot. Let's focus on an internal knowledge-based chatbot, let's say. So when you have people working in a company, any company really, they need to know how to operate. They need to know what standard operating procedures you follow. They need to know how to do the work. But also, even if you want to have human customer service representatives, which personally I plan on, I don't want to completely replace customer service with chatbots. I think there's a whole lot of value in having humans. But it's really helpful to have a chatbot for those humans. Because let's say a customer calls in and they want to know something about, you know, the classic toy example is, what are your hours, or what's your return policy, which, you know, is kind of more of the customer facing bot. But to get a more nuanced or detailed example. Let's say you have someone working in the company, and in this case, let me pick the example of someone working on developments, some developers working in a company. So one thing which I've experienced a lot of working as a developer is not having great documentation. And I'm pretty sure every developer who's ever lived, who's ever worked on anything in a team,
yep,
can testify that there's almost never enough documentation. And when it's wrong, it is awful. So it would be great if developers who worked in companies updated the documentation as they built things, as they went along. Let's be realistic, though. That's not going to change that much, because it's a problem of human behavior. And to be honest, it's also very costly in terms of time to write documentation. Of course, there are plenty of AI tools for writing documentation now, but once you actually have that information recorded somewhere, it would be really nice to use it without having to read through pages upon pages of technical documentation. So let's say I'm working on integrating GPT calls into my client's application, like I'm working on right now, and I run into an issue with, let's say I'm relatively inexperienced with JavaScript, and I hit some error with the package management tool, like we're using. Let's say we're using Yarn, and to be fair, I am actually inexperienced with JavaScript, so apologies if anything here seems a bit off. But let's say I'm inexperienced with JavaScript, and we're using Yarn to manage packages. And I hit some error, I just can't build the package, and I have no idea what's going on. Well, what am I going to do? I'm going to check documentation. What kind of issues have we hit in the past when we have tried, or when we have, put together packages, when we've built the tool that we're making at the company in the past? Well, let's say I look there and there's no documentation, or there's wrong documentation. I try it. I'm just stuck in this mess. What's the next thing I do? I reach out to one of my coworkers. I reach out to a more senior technical person. Well, that's taking up their time. And the thing is, senior technical people are very expensive. So from the company's point of view, it's really nice to have the most senior technical people spending most of their time on the technical work rather than training up newbies. But it's always critical to have some training for newbies. It's always critical for having to have the less experienced people be able to ask questions they need to ask. So here's where an internal knowledge base chatbot comes into play. So let's say I hit this error, hit this problem with Yarn. I go to the chatbot and explain the type of problem that I'm having. Well, if this exact type of problem has been recorded in the past, it'll be in the knowledge base. It'll be in documents that the chatbot can pull directly from, that the large language model can learn from. So when I type in the thing saying, hey, I have this error with Yarn, copy and paste it, how do I fix this? It doesn't just do a simple flowchart of, oh, the user said something that included the word Yarn, therefore let's pull up all of the documentation we have on how our system works with regards to Yarn, and then just feed that back to the user. No, it goes and brings specific pieces of information. It says things like, hey, you need to make sure this repo is on this version. You need to make sure that that repo is on that version. Then you need to rebuild the package. Here's the command to do so. Having specific, actionable especially, but relevant information on demand is the massive value that LLM-powered chatbots provide. And the potential for these, or the benefit to these, like in the example I gave, really is that once you teach this thing once, it can answer the questions as many times as you need moving forwards. So I gave an example of there already being documentation. If there's not, if I've asked a novel question, having some way of then referring to that senior person will be critical, but it'll only be necessary to do once. You know, this chatbot is essentially a perfect student. It only needs to ask a question once, and then it remembers forever, and it can answer future questions based off of what it's learned. So having, you know, a flowchart-based chatbot is too stiff, too rigid. It's not flexible enough, not dynamic enough for real conversations, the real world, and the questions that come up. But having a large language model on its own, as anyone who's played with ChatGPT's earlier versions knows, can be too flexible, too creative. It can make up information. It's when you have the combination of rigid ground truth in the form of documents and an LLM that can pull from it, learn from it, and especially when you can have the LLM cite its sources, that's when you have this amazing powerhouse of chatbots.
Yeah, that's extremely interesting, especially for all of us who are in the engineering world. I'm wondering, like, based on this use case and scenario that you described related to GitHub, do you see anything currently in the market that kind of does something like that to be able to essentially know the current state of the repo and then to be able to guide junior developers through that maze?
Yeah, great question. To be honest, this is something that I looked into a little while back. It's definitely sitting on my to-do list, but mm-hmm. to, you know, more into depth with this. So far, I'm sure I have seen something like a repo QA tool. I'm pretty sure I've seen like three or five of them. I don't mm-hmm. remember any names off the top of my head, mm-hmm. but I do know that they're also bots with like Slack interfaces. So you can go into the questions channel or whatever channel on your company's development Slack and ask the questions you have related to whatever, you know, you need to get answers to. First the Slack bot will go fetch the information and do the whole process that I just talked about and report back, or it'll say, you know, I don't know. And then it's at that point that a senior person can step in.
Got it. Interesting. What about like specifically, what are some of the, I guess, sort of tools as far as the APIs go that you primarily use? Like, I guess, how would you maybe compare OpenAI APIs to some of the other competitors? Do you have any sort of experience from that perspective or anything to share?
Yeah, so I'll admit that OpenAI absolutely got the first mover advantage on me. I mm-hmm. using their API like as soon as I possibly could, and mm-hmm. I've gotten very comfortable with it. I'm perhaps one of the rare developers who has not really experimented with, for example, Anthropic's Claude, mm-hmm. just because OpenAI provides such a, well, in my opinion, good service, good tool. And no, I'm not sponsored by them, but it's mm-hmm. just, it's very easy to use. And it's been easy to use since I started using it. Mm-hmm. It's very minimal code that you're adding. It is very straightforward. And it works so well out of the box that I've just stuck with it the whole time.
No worries. Well, how about like the like kind of like agent, like kind of multi-agent frameworks like AutoGen or stuff like that? Any thoughts or
Yeah, great
experience?
question. So I'm pretty thoroughly convinced that we're going to see a lot of work done around agents. So right now I'm actually experimenting with trying out different agent building tools. So I'm a little hesitant to like give any recommendations right now. Perhaps next time I can give some better thoughts on that. But I one thing I'll say is I guess yeah, one thing I'll mention is LangChain. LangChain has, to me, seems like it's surprisingly, well, it maybe not surprisingly, but very up and coming in the fact that it's a really nice library for LLM powered applications in general, not just agents. And they're built, seems like they're building a whole ecosystem around it, kind of in the way that AWS has built an ecosystem around CPUs, around, you know, renting out computers. Obviously, you know, one of them is, I mean, there are some differences, but in terms of actually building agents, I expect we're going to see probably in the next couple of months even, either a surge of new frameworks or, you know, and or a couple of tools become extremely popular. You know, I've mentioned before GPTs by OpenAI. This is a it's a very, very quick and pretty simple agent builder, but it has the extreme limitation of not letting agents talk to each other. I will say I expect that at you know, whenever OpenAI does another release, either at a dev day or either quietly and just, you know, posts about it on their website, I expect that's when we'll see the ability for these agents, that, you know, the so-called GPTs, to interact with each other. As soon as they do that, that's when, you know, all of this stuff, the stuff about agents, that building these and integrating them, that's when I expect this will take off to a whole new, there'll be a sort of a wave of this, because the trend that I'm seeing here is companies see large language models, especially GPT-4, which, you know, OpenAI made and provides, and they see a lot of use cases for it. So they'll start building some tools around it, infrastructure tools. And then OpenAI will see those use cases and go, okay, thanks. And then they can build these tools into their own product. You know, I'm not saying that they're stealing anything. It's, they see the way their customers are using their product, and they make it easier for their customers to do that exact thing. So one thing that would not surprise me, it would not surprise me if within 3 months, like within 3 months, let's say, a lot of or OpenAI, I expect, would release some, you know, nice agent building tools and maybe even a platform around that specifically. And then a lot of these agent focus or agent building companies will either go out of business or need to do a fundamental shift in the way that they do things, because, you know, OpenAI would have at that point released their whole business either for free or integrated it very closely into, or put it very, very close to the LLM.
That's very interesting. So I have a kind of couple of questions related to this, but let me start maybe just with first, like, you know, I'm sure someone in the audience not necessarily as familiar with LangChain. Maybe if you want to just kind of highlight what LangChain is and what it does and why it's useful.
Yeah, absolutely. So LangChain, so there are, when I say LangChain, I guess I'm referring to a couple of different things. So there's the LangChain libraries. I believe they now support both Python and JavaScript. It's you know, I'll focus on the Python one. It's, you know, Python library for building large language model centered applications. So what does this mean? And yeah, so when you look at essentially modern applications, it's a database focused application. And, you know, if you look at something, a tool like Salesforce, let's say, what is Salesforce, or what is their product? It's a database with some very, very helpful interfaces. It's, you know, and you could spin up a database on your own machine. You could create a SQLite database and write your own interfaces into it. But the reason why people don't, you know, one of the reasons people don't do that and instead just go to Salesforce is Salesforce has found specific needs that people have, has found specific ways that people interact with information. And they've made it really, really easy to do that. You know, keep track of your leads information, write those into the database, pull them out really easily, sort the leads, do filtering. So in the way that databases are the core of a lot of today's applications, I am thoroughly convinced we're gonna see large language models as a core, if not the core of a lot of future applications. Obviously, databases are still critically important, especially when working with all this data that, you know, that LLMs need. But it's not going to be just a database. It's going to be things like, well, you know, I've been talking about chatbots. Chatbots are an application built around a large language model, because you're not just dealing directly with the model itself. You're not, when you talk with ChatGPT especially, you're not dealing with just the model. You're not writing the vectors yourself and sending them in and taking the vectors out and converting them to text. You have a nice clean chat window that's like text messaging essentially. So chatbots, other agents, also things like transforming information, data analysis, something like generating reports from a lot of company data. These are all things that can be built. These are all types of applications that can be built around a large language model. And LangChain is a library for actually doing that, for actually doing that quickly and efficiently.
Yeah, very interesting. So kind of segueing from there into like, basically, do you think, what kind of based on also some of the statements, like essentially OpenAI as I guess product team understanding their customers' use cases more, as obviously they're using their products. Obviously LangChain, when they first came out, they were like a really cool and useful tool for developers to build around OpenAI APIs. But then kind of with every new release, it seems like maybe, I don't know, to put it lightly, maybe like LangChain is becoming a little bit more irrelevant just because the APIs are becoming more powerful. I guess where I'm going with this is like, you're saying like, you know, OpenAI is like gonna take over a lot of other libraries and tools that are built around their kind of APIs. Like, do you see not only LangChain becoming maybe irrelevant to a certain extent, but also like other wrapper products around their APIs? Because let's say the use case around GitHub, you know, will essentially with AGI or some other in the future releases, will they kind of replace every single app that's built on top of their platform? Or I guess, what are your thoughts?
Yeah,
I feel that's the direction they're going in, but I don't know. That's just my biased opinion. But I guess, what are your thoughts around it?
Yeah, and you know, we haven't even touched on AGI, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are curious about. So, you know, I might as well just address that right now. It depends on what your definition of AGI is. You know, it's, you could definitely argue that something like ChatGPT is already AGI. You know, it's generally intelligent. You can ask it questions about everything from software engineering to, you know, historical facts. You know, though, be careful about the answers you get from that. But it's generally knowledgeable. It can synthesize information. It can translate information between languages. It has a, what looks to be a solid understanding of what, you know, what information means, you know, not just the data points, but what the information actually is that the data represents. Do I think that AGI is going to replace every app ever? Probably not. If we're looking at AGI as some fully autonomous machine or some AI that we could interact with, like you and I interact with, or with each other. I expect we'll see something like that in the near future. I will see something like an agent that is completely autonomous, that, or as close to completely autonomous as we can. You'll probably see a lot of these actually, where it's, you know, it's your own assistant for whatever task you're working on, that you can say, okay, go do this. It will go figure out what you're saying. It will ask clarifying questions on it of its own accord. It'll figure out what questions to ask, and then it'll go use the tools available to solve those tasks. So that might have, you know, worried some of your listeners that I just said that with such, you know, certainty in my voice, and somewhat without concern in my voice. But I do want to be clear that this is something, this is a very large shift coming up. This is something that, this is one of the main reasons why I'm in this field right now, is because I see this shift coming. I see that there are new, you know, people have called this the new industrial revolution, and I think that's a pretty good analogy. There are tasks that previously had to be performed by humans that will be performed at least in part by machines. Of course, there are also machines that will enhance human capability, but to some degree, human work will be replaced by AIs. You know, do I think that it's going to be a massive apocalypse in the next few years? No, I don't think so. I think that it's basically a great time to learn about AI, to practice using AI, and use this as another tool in your toolbox, you know, to everyone listening now. Just like how basically everyone uses Google right now, I expect just about everyone will be using these AI agents in the future, or in the very near future. So to back up a little bit though, because you brought up AGI, I just wanted to touch on that. Specifically around LangChain, you asked, you know, will LangChain be replaced? I expect that things like LangChain, basically frameworks for building LLM-powered applications, will be around for as long as there will be LLMs, because, again, LLMs are powerful, or they're very powerful, but they need structure. They need some format, some way of operating that is useful to the specific needs of each person, of each company. Much like how, you know, databases exist right now, and have existed for a while, and tools that exist on top of databases still exist. And rather than, you know, not just still exist, they have multiplied, they're plentiful. Tools that make databases useful to you are extremely plentiful. They are basically modern applications. Now, there are relatively few database companies in the world, and that's what I expect we'll see to a degree with these LLMs. I expect that we'll see very few LLM providers. You know, OpenAI is one. Of course, there are plenty of open source models. I'll be honest, that changes so fast that I don't know what we're going to see. I don't know if we're going to see open source models becoming so incredibly good that it makes much more sense to use an open source model that you can control and customize yourself with some, you know, you can just run it on your own cloud VM, let's say, rather than using, you know, OpenAI's API. I don't know. I expect that it will be the case that there will be some LLM service provider or LLM providers that will rent out, you know, their LLMs to you, handle sort of everything behind the scenes, much like how AWS rents out virtual machines to people. And also, you know, there will be very few LangChains in the world. You know, libraries, support, and services for turning these or using these LLMs for applications or building applications around these LLMs. I expect the applications that we see or the applications actually built around LLMs will be extremely plentiful. It will be the new type of application.
Interesting. So do you think, that, eventually, I guess software engineers will be, I guess the question is, will there be more software engineers and they'll have a lot more enhanced super skills using like LLM tools to build stuff or build software? Or will eventually, like model LLMs replace a lot of software engineers? Because I've seen a lot of very cool products that are coming to market, especially when it comes to like so from Vercel, for example, where you can direct the LLM to essentially build like a front-end web component. And they're embedding like CSS classes like Tailwind CSS, like building like a whole card, a whole component. All you need to do then is wire it on the back end or something like that. I guess in general, what are your opinions? Like how will software engineers fit into this whole new paradigm of technology?
Yeah, that is a phenomenal question. My thought on this is large language models and basically these code generating tools will do a lot of the work necessary to build code to basically do the first 80% or 90% of the work. But I don't think that human software engineers will go away anytime soon. In the future, is it possible that AGI will build code, perfectly by itself? Maybe, potentially even probably. But for now, I don't think there are even really good, enterprise software building AI tools, but I might have missed them. As things are coming out so fast that no one can actually stay perfectly on top of everything right now. But in the near-ish future, I expect what we'll see is software development tools that or AI-powered software development tools that do a lot of the work for software engineers, but not all of it. There's always going to Or for a while, there's going to be a need for humans to glue things together, to make things play nicely. Because the advantage that, as far as I can see, humans will always have over machines is we have a certain level of creativity, of adaptability, of new problem ways to solve problems in different nuanced ways and to adapt to the situation in a way that machines will always lag behind because, LLMs, large language models specifically, are in a very real sense, they're an approximation of human thought and communication. Large language models weren't trained off of some perfect source of, it wasn't trained off of some perfect brain. It was trained off of the communications between humans that was available at the time of its training. As I don't know for sure, but I've heard that a lot of the training for the GPT-3 model and probably 4, I've just heard that Reddit was a big source of that. Now, anyone who's been on Reddit can tell you that there's a lot to be improved upon in terms of the quality of information on Reddit, in terms of the quality of communication on Reddit. But it still seems to be good enough to the point where a machine could learn to communicate like that. But the thing is, there's always, until machines surpass humans in terms of creativity, in terms of adaptability and problem solving in a very, very general sense, there's always going to be need for humans to take things that last 10% to go from, we have these different working modules. We need to make them play nicely together. Or, there's this weird edge case we hit. We now need to now go do all this debugging. That is what I see being the very, very valuable or the value add of software engineers. So to put this all succinctly, this is not a great time to try and get a software job where you can only do the sort of boilerplate code, the entry level work. So I expect this is a very hard time for recent grads, for people just coming out of undergrad with a computer science degree, who aren't practiced and familiar with using something like ChatGPT or other code generation tools, to actually do all of this, you know, first 80%, the boilerplate code, the beginning work for them. I think that senior developers who are either faster and more efficient than large language models right now will be fine for the next little while, but I expect that they'll be fine for a long while because they have experience making things work, taking things that last 10%. That's a very valuable skill. And I know that you didn't ask for this, but I will add, for anyone who doesn't have a whole lot of software development experience, and you know, I'll mention that I don't have years of software development experience. I would not consider myself a senior developer. One thing that I'm working on is developing the skill of using AIs to take me that first 80% and treating that as just a tool, like I would use Stack Overflow as a tool, and then practice taking things that last 20%, that last 10% to completion, to usefulness. That I think will be extremely valuable and continue to, or is it already extremely valuable and will continue to be extremely valuable.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, I you mentioned Stack Overflow. I think they recently like laid off half of their company, and you know, I haven't used to spend a lot of time on it last year, this year, trying to think about even visited their site maybe once or twice. Yeah, so that's very interesting. Do you think like so, for example, this conversation we're having right now is being recorded on Zoom, and then it will be transcribed, you know, like I use Otter AI, kind of do a transcription text to voice. Do you think like this will be part of the training model for some LLM, probably OpenAI, like the way we're interacting at the moment?
I'll be honest, I don't know what Otter AI's policy is, but I mean, I will say.
Like, let's say we granted
Oh,
liberty
yeah.
to do whatever he wants, would
Oh,
it be a
yeah. I
useful?
mean, if we give them free training data, I am sure that they probably have some sort of filtering process to make sure that they're not giving it horrible, or to try and not give it horrible training data. But the most valuable asset, or the most valuable resource for these, or that these LLM provider companies can obtain, or the most valuable asset for LLM providers to obtain is training data. It is their electricity. It's what makes the LLM run. It's what makes the LLM functional, makes it better. And I have no doubt in my mind that a company like OpenAI is working really hard on acquiring new data, because you know, as much information as there is on the internet, there are limitations. There are some, you know, restrictions. There's copyright. And there's also just the fact that when you look at the size of models, I'll be honest, it's been a little bit since I checked what the largest size was, but it was definitely over 100 billion parameters. I think it's like a few hundred billion parameter models. You need a lot of data to, well, first train these things, but then to actually fine-tune them to make them useful. You need probably somewhere approaching, you know, most of the knowledge that humans have digitized to make it. Well, I'm not going to actually say that, because off the top of my head, I don't know how much information humans have digitized, but you need a massive amount of data to train and then fine-tune massive LLMs.
Got it. And I guess, how do you keep your technical skills sharp and kind of stay up to date with the latest technology?
Great question. So one of the reasons why I'm w doing the work right now with the actual GPT integration for the edtech company is because I want to have that. I want to still, keep my technical skills sharp, like you said, but I want to get diverse experience and practice with different ways to use AI for business. And I mentioned that I'm doing two main things right now. One is this integration work where I'm doing a lot more software engineering in this role, where I'm integrating the LLM into their application, into the application. Of course, prompt engineering, kind of an overused word, but still, I think is the best way to describe the other part of the edtech, my role at the edtech company. So, how do I integrate the LLM into their software and make it useful? On the other hand, my exploration with agents and my work with that, which hopefully in the near future I'll be able to come tell you more about and explain the fruits of my labor with that. That's the other side of things. That's the other part of the skill, the experience that I want to be getting right now is how do I just build agents quickly and effectively, make them useful, basically iterate as quickly as I can. This is a balance that works for me. Oh, and then of course there's the news, which I don't think I can say that I'm staying up to date. I don't think anyone's actually staying perfectly up to date. Information's coming out so fast. What I do is I've picked a couple YouTube channels, a couple news sources where I have seen in the past that they do a good job of communicating effective, relevant information, and I just will watch their videos when they come out. And then everything else I basically just let go of because I know that I'm not going to stay up to date with a lot of things like image generation models. A while back I was following, but I've essentially let go of trying to stay up to date with image generation models because I want to focus specifically on LLMs. To be fair, there's probably a lot more to learn about LLMs than image generation models just because there's so many more use cases that I can see with them. But for anyone in the audience looking to stay up to date, I would say right now, I want to say, hey, just follow the stuff that I do, and if any of your viewers want to hear more from me, they can go to brycejacobsai.com. But I'm not going to be perfect at this. I think that it is very valuable to start initially by shopping around. Take some time on a weekend, go watch a couple videos from a bunch of different YouTube channels, go read a bunch of different news sources. And if you do that a couple times over a couple of days, you'll start to notice some patterns of which channels and news sources have information that's relevant to you, which ones that have information that's not. I would say avoid clickbait as clickbaity videos as much as possible. You're going to find a lot of titles, a lot of thumbnails that are heavy on clickbait just because that's where things are at these days. But find videos that are as dense as possible that convey as much useful information to you as is possible in the least amount of your time as possible. That's something that I'm working on doing. That's something that I will be doing a lot more in the future. So yeah, I would say just go shop around, find a few things you like. If it's me, that's excellent. If it's not, that's totally fine. And get your news from these few trusted sources and keep playing with stuff when you have free time on your weekends, when you have a free Saturday and you think, oh, that's interesting. I want to play with that little new tool or toy. And also know that most of the world isn't actually up to date with the state of AI right now. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably already in the top, I don't know, there are what, 8 billion people in the world, so probably something like the top few hundred thousand of people who are aware of these things. So you're already very, very far ahead of the curve when it comes to the global population. Of course, here in Silicon Valley, there's, you know, this is not a representative sample of the world. My personal thought on this is, if you want to become a super expert in some part of AI, do just that, pick some part and focus as much as you can. But unless you really want to do that, keep up to date with these trends, keep up to date with the news, like I mentioned. But pick a specific, you know, even still, pick a specific area that you want to become, you know, generally aware of, and think mostly about how it interacts with the stuff you work on. You know, if you're a developer and you want to stay up to date with code generation, stay up to date with that. And I would say, you know, let go of things like image generation, which is something I did. If you specifically focus on visual work, I have never been an artist. I've never been particularly focused on visual art. But if that's what you do for your job, if you're maybe, if you're working game, if you're building video games, if you're building visuals for video games, it probably makes a lot more sense for you to focus on the image generation AIs and 3D modeling tool or 3D modeling AIs rather than large language models. So I would say focus to the degree necessary, and then stay aware enough, unless you want to really specialize, in which case expect to spend a lot more time.
Interesting. Kind of like, I guess in closing, I guess kind of related to the advice based on you're giving right now to the listeners. So we run a talent marketplace and a recruiting platform. So we have like thousands of users, and, you know, good percentage of them are at some state of doing some kind of like a career change, either maybe being in a non-tech industry and being affected by something, and then now having, you know, affinity towards technology or specifically AI, or maybe being like a technical person that now wants to put more focus on their career related to AI. So I guess, how do you, and then obviously there's like, you know, younger kids that are maybe in college or just getting out of college or on their way to college. So how do you, like, what would be your advice for these people to become, I guess, to build some kind of like a skill set that will be applicable for a future employer? Like, how do you get to that level of some kind of technical acumen that you can actually start earning money by working for someone or having your own business?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So I'll break this down into a couple pieces. For now, at least, if you have some software development experience, I expect that you could get a software development job. You know, AI hasn't replaced software developers yet. You know, like I said earlier, I don't know if it will ever replace software developers completely. But if you can code by hand and you can do it pretty well, you can almost certainly get a job right now. If that's something that you want to build that skill, do so, you know, write software applications by hand. Of course, though, this is, you know, talking about AI, and I am very much an AI focused kind of guy. And I would really say for anyone who, especially for someone who doesn't have a whole lot of, or hasn't been developing like software skills, software applications for years, this is an excellent time to focus on how to use AI tools to your advantage. Because, you know, imagine you are really comfortable using an IDE to develop develop faster than someone who's using some basic text editor, someone who's using Vim or VI. You can be much more productive than they can if you become comfortable with the tool. You know, the biggest disruptor I think that we've seen in terms of software so far has been something like Stack Overflow, or the internet, basically being able to access this information quickly and then use these tools to be more productive and be faster. I would say to anyone who hasn't already, you know, developed that skill of developing software fast and efficiently and well by hand, use these tools. You know, use ChatGPT to build a lot of the code for an application you want to make, and then, you know, get good at gluing the pieces together and making this, making the application function well. Because there's a lot that goes into it that's not just writing code. Basically, you put AI, put these AI tools as tools in your toolbox. Now, specifically for people who, you know, are kind of AI nerds like I am and want to specifically focus on something besides just code generation or software development, it comes down to niching. Figure out what niche and decide on what niche you want to focus on. Sometimes it can be hard to, you know, pick a niche when you see the vast breadth of what something like ChatGPT can do. But I would say stay as close as possible to the experience you already have, unless you have a really good reason to move to something else. So, you know, you mentioned people coming from other non-tech fields moving into tech and being curious about AI and wanting to get involved in AI. You know, I mentioned the rental property management thing earlier. If you come from anything in real estate, go find how AI tools can make your life easier. Go learn about agents. And, you know, when I say learn about agents, go watch a YouTube video on them, maybe two YouTube videos, then do something like go to OpenAI's GPT's page on the ChatGPT interface and go practice, you know, play with them, build a few things. This is how you get started with it. You know, where you go from there, I can't really say. It's going to depend a lot on what you get interested in, what opportunities you find. Because, you know, if you find that you can now do the work that you've done in the past, but with significantly more efficiency, well, either you can do that work again, but just be faster at it, or you can go to a company that does this kind of work and say, hey, here's a tool, this AI tool that, you know, you don't even have to call it AI. You just say, here's a tool that does the work that you need to do faster, cheaper, better than doing it by hand. And suddenly you've become extremely valuable. You've provided something extremely valuable to this company. That's basically the entrepreneurial way. And it's something that I expect to see a lot of people doing. You know, it's something that I'm certainly working on. But really, yeah, this, if there's one, and to wrap this all up, if there's one takeaway I could say, AI is a powerful tool, and the people who figure out how to harness the power of this tool to solve specific problems that businesses face will make money off of the fact that they're providing a lot of value in a way that hasn't been possible before.
Very interesting. Thank you, Bryce. Tell us one more time, where can the listeners find you?
Yeah, great question. So I am on, I have my website, BryceJacobsAI.com. I'm on LinkedIn. My username or handle is BryceJacobsAI. I don't actually have other social media set up yet. I'm a little bit hesitant, to be honest, to get into that, because I like to stay focused on what I'm doing. So if anyone wants to get some updates from me, go to my LinkedIn page. I'll be posting there. I'll have a general, you know, resource collection on my website. And that's the place to be.
Awesome. Thank you, Bryce. This was a super, super interesting conversation for me. Actually, I learned quite a bit from you. So thank you again for being on Anablock Podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you, Vu, for having me.